In this episode, we welcome Kim Stevens. Kim has been with NACAC since 2006, managing two of their largest projects. In her 25-plus years of child welfare work, Kim has provided training and consultation both nationally and internationally on kinship care, foster care, adoption, parenting, positive youth development, advocacy and leadership, trauma and recovery, and youth permanency. She and her husband, Buddy, have six children, four of whom were adopted from foster care. Welcome to the podcast, Kim.
It's great to be with you, April.
I really can't think of a better person to help us understand the importance of accessing services and supports, so we're going to jump right in. Kim, why is it so important for parents who are fostering or adopting to get connected with services and supports?
Well, that's a great question, April. You know, the majority of these children have experienced trauma and loss, and parenting them can be very challenging. The experiences have impacted the children in all the domains of their life, and this oftentimes requires the help of professionals who understand the impact of trauma and separation, and it can also help the child, but help the person who is parenting the child. I really can't imagine myself going through the journey without getting the supports and services that we had to avail ourselves of.
Well, I'm so glad that your experience can help others. And so not only your professional endeavors, but also your personal connection to this experience. So this really is a great help for parents. I've certainly seen the positive impact of families getting surrounded by services and supports. Can you describe some of the services that children and families may need?
Sure. And most of these are actually services that our children needed over the years. And happy to tell the other families out there that our kids are grown and doing really well. What we found that our children needed were certainly things around counseling for both our children, but also for the family as a whole. We were very clear that we didn't want our children to ever feel like they were identified as a problem, if it were, but more that the whole family needed to learn a new way of being a family. And that idea of normalizing the experience of needing services and supports, I think, is important for all the members of the family. We needed to get speech and occupational therapy for some of our children. Certainly after school support and specialized child care can be very important for a child who has experienced loss, trauma, or separation. That feeling of being apart from your caregiver can often trigger reactions. So you need a child caregiver who understands and can respond accordingly. Medical care is very important. Many of our kids have come to us without all of the medical pieces in place, and we have to sometimes put together some puzzle pieces and figure out what they need to be healthy and strong. And special education services are almost universally needed. Not to say that the children who come to us through foster care and adoption don't have the same capacity and the same abilities as other children, but oftentimes just the moving and the transitions can set them back in school. So we want to give them all the supports that they can get so that they can achieve and get to the same place as their peers.
We talked a little bit about the services for children and young people, but you said that this is all really about families too. It's a unit. So can you share some of your thoughts specifically on what type of supports families who are fostering and adopting may need?
Oh, absolutely, April. I think in many ways, the families need to get some services even more than the children do. I know that both my husband and myself and our two birth children who welcomed adoptive siblings into the family, but then as more children joined us, even our already adopted children, all of us benefited from going to special classes, taking special training, learning more about the impacts of trauma, the impacts of loss, and the impacts of changing family dynamics. It really helped us understand and normalize some of the experiences that we were having, realize that we were doing the best we could, each of us, parents and children alike, but that yes, having some extra help and some new understandings was really going to be very important for us to feel successful. We definitely benefited from family therapy. So our children Several of our children went to individual therapy, but we also made sure that we went to therapy as a family. Again, both to support all the members of the family, but also so that those kids who were really struggling to try to figure out their role in this new family dynamic never had to feel as though that burden of doing the work was all on them. Sometimes, many parents, actually, I wouldn't say sometimes, I would say most of the time, parents can find lots and lots of help and support by being part of a parent-to-parent network or a parent support group. And certainly for kids, birth, adopted, foster, all of them benefit from being part of a peer group where they can feel as though their experience is not unique to them and where they can find commonality, they can find friendships, and more than anything else, they can find a place to have fun, relax, be themselves, and not have to explain themselves all the time.
Before we move on, I thought it might be important just to briefly explain the differences between formal and informal supports just so that people have a clear understanding of that.
Oh, sure. And I think it's such an important question, April, because both are critical. So when you think about a formal support, that is usually something that's connected to a professional. It could be with a school system. It could be something paid for with insurance or out of pocket. Most often the providers require professional degrees. So you can think of people like family therapist, individual counselor, occupational therapist, speech therapist, physical therapist. There also, you want to think about being connected to a psychiatrist if you are going to be doing medication management. You don't want to be doing that without somebody really very skilled and knowledgeable. And then for informal supports, that can usually consist of family, friends, and other experienced foster, adoptive, and kinship parents. Those people who really understand, those people that accept your family, support your family, respect your family, and are kind of in it with you to the best of their ability. And those are the people that you can find in your neighborhood, in your faith community, in your own family, and through support groups and other parent and peer networks.
That's great, Kim. All really specific examples of what these two things, and together really combined, the formal and informal, really create the conditions for healing and success and for thriving. So it's really good. Now, more specific, what does a therapeutic network look like and how do you create one?
Right. So a therapeutic network, in large part, does consist of some of those formal supports that I listed. I think for me anyway, and for most of the families that I've seen that really feel as though their network is working for their child and for their family, those are networks of providers and programs that are very committed to working together on behalf of meeting the needs. So rather than, 10 different appointments and each person has a different idea, your therapeutic network should be committed to having regular, maybe monthly or quarterly meetings as a team, talking about a child and a family holistically, and talking about how what each of them provides leads to the best outcome for healing, for wellness, for well-being. The other thing about it is that in order to put together the best therapeutic network for your child, it really requires a thorough, complete assessment to figure out exactly what is the child struggling with, what are their strengths. I mean, we certainly don't want to forget that piece of it, and to figure out how those strengths and needs also work within that network. I would say one of the things that sometimes gets lost in the mix, and I sure do want to encourage parents to never lose this piece of it, is that your child, even as a young child, should be at the center of that therapeutic network, should feel as though it's their team working with them and for them, rather than working sort of on them, if you know what I mean. Because I think oftentimes our kids who have come through some of these difficult experiences of loss can feel like there's something wrong with them, when actually they are some of the strongest, most capable people in the world who just need a bit of help to try to kind of figure out where they came from and where they're going.
That's so well said, Kim. And I so appreciate you mentioning assessments, because really knowledge is power. And the more you know, the better that you can support your family and your child. So what I'm hearing you say is really about leaning into advocacy and proactively seeking out the services and supports that may be needed. How can foster and adoptive parents, or how can parents that are fostering and adopting, learn to be these proactive advocates?
April, that question about being a good advocate is really one of the most important things that parents who are fostering or adopting need to either have coming into it, or boy, they need to develop it pretty darn quickly. You want to be the person who is your child's most loyal and fiercest cheerleader. You want to constantly be thinking about what they need. You want to pay attention to what they are telling you, both verbally and nonverbally. You need to remember that you are the person that is caring for this child 24 hours a day. So you know that child better than anybody else. And when you're hearing no, 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 know that you can ask the questions. I think one of the most important questions that I learned to ask when I was facing someone who did not want to provide for my child the things that they needed was to simply ask them why. Why do you think that won't work? Why do you think it's not the right answer? What do you think would be a better answer? And when you ask the question why as an advocate, you often are able to get the person who is not providing what your child needs to kind of talk themselves into a corner. They eventually come around to realize what is the right answer. I think one thing that parents who are fostering or adopting should do is keep a log. Write down the things that you're observing, write down the behaviors, write down the times of the day or different things that happened around that, so that you can provide some clues to the professionals that you're going to be looking to give you the answers and to give you the services that you need. Pay attention to things like anniversaries, special dates, special times of the year. One of the things that you can do as a really good advocate is if there is a challenging behavior or if there is a concern that you are trying to advocate on behalf of, also pay attention to when it's not happening. Sometimes we can learn more about when things are not happening than we can when they are. So what was it that happened before you went to the grocery store on Tuesday that did not result in a tantrum in the middle of the grocery store? Was it a change in your behavior? Was it a change in circumstances? That kind of information can be very, very helpful. And then once those services are in place that you need, you want to be an active team member. You want to be available. You want to be responsive. You want to show gratitude and appreciation for the people that are trying to help you and your family. You want to make sure that they know how valuable that they are in this partnership. And you want to be able to report back to them any and all positive changes that you see, because everybody is more motivated when they see that there is something great happening, and especially your child is going to be. And so, April, one of the very important things about being a good advocate for your child is that it involves very, very good problem-solving skills. My friends and I who are fostering and adopting, we refer to ourselves as members of the problem-solving club. And we don't take no for an answer. We just keep looking for solutions.
And what you were talking about, Kim, which I so appreciate, is this idea of a team effort and then all of this like real commitment to keeping notes and logs and noticing and listening. And then the thing that I love so much is being grateful and proactively sharing the positive changes that are going on. All this is so important. The next question I have for you is, why is it so important for parents who are fostering or adopting to get connected to a support group or a peer-to-peer network?
So, April, that's a great question. This really is a different kind of parenting. When we are surrounding ourselves with other people who have walked this same walk, they can tell us what they've done that has worked. They can hold our hands and hold our hope for us when we sometimes can't hold our hope for ourselves. they can normalize an experience that to much of the world does not look normal, but in fact is quite normal and quite expected, in fact. When we have families that are experiencing similar things and they can share their successes, it gives us ideas for how we can also be successful. Oftentimes we can find folks who are willing to provide respite for either us or for our child, remembering that the children are also balancing a whole lot of emotional baggage when they come into our families. When I have struggled with different issues that my kids have had, I've been able to turn to other parents who've had kids with the same issues, who've given me perfect, wonderful, on-target advice.
I know all that you shared will be so helpful to families as they look to access services and supports for their family, for their children, and so I thank you so much.
NTDC was funded by the Children's Bureau Administration on Children, Youth, and Families, Administration for Children and Families, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, under grant number 90CO1134. The contents of this podcast are solely the responsibility of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official views of the Children's Bureau.